Good afternoon, Justices. My name is Robert Goff, and I represent the defendant and appellant Earl Bradley. This is an appeal taken from his convictions on multiple counts of rape, which resulted in life sentences. May it please the court, the monstrosity of the allegations and the sheer enormity of volume of the crimes and victims can almost be termed unbelievable. This case has challenged the people of the state of Delaware at every level. The citizen who, with anger, seeks punishment for the crimes alleged and fearing dismissal of these charges based upon what they perceive to be a technicality. The police involved in the competitive search for what they perceive to be justice. The lawyers for the state and for the defense. And finally, and most importantly, for the judges of this state, both magistrate and judge of the Superior Court and justices of the Supreme Court. This is the kind of case that one might guess would cause a judge or a justice to think upon Justice Cardozo's comment that the criminal is to go free because the constable has blundered. The comment he made to justify rejecting the exclusionary rule in New York State. This is the unfortunate situation that is on appeal. There was an old search warrant in December of 2008 citing multiple acts of inappropriate actions by Bradley upon pediatric patients, and that warrant sought child pornography at the office. This warrant was denied by a judge who said there was no connection, no nexus, between the allegations of molestation and the search for pornography at that location. And nothing happened after that. There was no other search and no arrest. Then there was a new search warrant a year later, citing the same facts and acts as well as one additional allegation. This time, the warrant did not ask to look for pornography. It authorized only, and I quote, medical files relating to the treatment and care of listed children to include paper files as well as computer files in regards to children 1 through 8, the children who were the alleged victims of abuse in the body of the search warrant.
Now, if there were reports independent of the warrant to the police of sexual abuse at Dr. Bradley's office, these medical files would be relevant to that, wouldn't they? To that investigation as evidence of a crime or corroborating evidence or perhaps evidence that exculpated your client?
Strictly speaking, they could be termed relevant, Your Honor, but the inquiry when we have a search warrant is within the four corners and as to these individual persons. And also, if the inquiry of the court, if I understand Your Honor's question correctly, the question is how these medical files could be relevant to allegations of molestation. Unfortunately, the warrant is silent as to how those medical records would be helpful.
Wouldn't they at least corroborate dates and times when a patient would be present?
They could, they would. But again, that's not stated in the body of the search warrant itself.
How obvious does it have to be before you can leave it out of the warrant?
I think it has to be pretty obvious, Your Honor. And here's why. Because what happened in this particular case with the concept of a medical file is it became different things at different times. Because the warrant itself lacks any description of how medical files are relevant, it means that each police officer and at different points in time was able to define the nature of the relevance in terms which allowed him or her to seek out either traditional medical files, paper files, which they found very shortly after it began,
Is not on the police officer, it's on the magistrate, isn't it?
And I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The focus is on what the magistrate had presented to him or her.
Well, the focus is on both. And here's, and the reason why the focus is on both is because this is a challenge not just to the warrant itself and the scope and the validity of the warrant, but it's also a challenge to the manner in which the warrant was executed. Both of these arguments dovetail in our argument. And the reason why they come together is because since the warrant is lacking in any real definition of what a medical file is, and since there's no statement of how the medical file is relevant and to gaining evidence, that means there's no guidance to the police officer to determine what exactly a medical file is.
Well, the affidavit does show that these children 1 through 8 went to Dr. Bradley for medical treatment, correct?
It does say that.
And there are facts recited in the affidavit that in the course of medical treatment, there may have been some sexual abuse.
It does say that.
Is it not inferable by a reasonable policeman and a reasonable magistrate, neutral magistrate, that the medical files, however they're defined, may either contain that evidence or lead to that evidence?
As Your Honor's question was stated, the answer is no, because as however it's defined, it's defined by one police officer. A medical file on the witness stand was defined as pictures taken by the surveillance cameras that extended and faced out from the medical office.
Well, we're talking about whether medical files are, to use your words, traditional, which I suppose are the doctor's notes of what the diagnosis mm-hmm. was, what the course of treatment was, the typical type of medical file, or whether these medical files may contain something that perhaps shouldn't be there mm-hmm. Or would lead to other images and other recordings that would not be part of the traditional file, but would evidence behavior that took place in the doctor's office.
Well, if the question that's being posed to me is that can medical files be corroborative of allegations of sexual abuse by a doctor, the answer is yes, it can. It can reasonably be the case. If it can be inferred, it depends on how far a court is willing to allow a person to infer that without stating specifically how it would corroborate, because that was Your Honor's first question about corroboration. And that is the only description of the nature of relevance that the medical file would have. It was said to corroborate.
Well, isn't that a reasonable inference? It's either reasonable or unreasonable. Which is it?
A reasonable inference to corroborate?
Yes.
It's reasonable. It's reasonable. But the question isn't whether there's probable cause. The question is whether that needed to be in the warrant. And more importantly, the larger question is that if they're going to, they meaning the police and law enforcement, are going to actually go after and seek non-traditional file medical files, and that's not a phrase that I used the first time. That is a phrase that the state characterized in their briefs below. They said that this is a warrant that seeks non-traditional medical files. The question that comes to my mind and that I posed at that point in time and still pose today to this court is, what is a non-traditional medical file? There is no such thing. There's no definition in the dictionary. There's no definition in the body of the warrant. So a non-traditional medical file becomes whatever the police officer reviewing this warrant desires it to be.
Well, it is true that there's no technical definition of what that term was intended to mean in the affidavit in support of the application for a warrant. However, the application and the affidavit does refer to paper hard copy files, and it also refers to material recorded on computers.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So at least to that extent, the affidavit would support an inference that we're talking about something other than just strictly hard copy paper files.
That's correct. And we're working in, you know, for the last 20 or 30 years, you could expect things to be occasionally on computer. So that's what it seems to be talking about in the warrant. That seems to be the definition.
Including photographs.
Can it include photographs? I suppose it could if it was documenting an injury or an x-ray or things of that nature, yes. I would think that it could include those things.
Or a face to help a doctor remember a patient?
I would think that it could include those things. But the other problem that exists is that when the search took place and the execution of the search took place, there was no indication that any of these things existed.
There's four buildings involved in the search.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But at the trial, evidence was only admitted from Building A and Building B. Is that correct?
I believe so.
So does that render moot any arguments as to Buildings C or D?
Well, because that evidence wasn't introduced, it automatically is moot. But okay. The evidence that was introduced was admitted as to Building B. So that was the most significant evidence that was produced at trial. But the fact that the police entered into Buildings A through C and took everything that they could at those particular locations indicates that they were going beyond the scope of the warrant. It also gives us an eye into what they perceived to be or what they claimed to be was a medical file. And what I would urge the court to consider is that the drives which were seized, the thumb drives and other things that were seized from Building B, were not seized from the context of the medical office. They were seized from a location remote from the medical office, not accessible to the staff at that medical office. There was no indication that any of those drives were related to any of the files. The drives were not indicated to be labeled in any fashion that they were patient files. The individual files on the drives were not labeled in any fashion. And the particular drive that Detective Spillin looked at the day after the warrant is a file that wasn't denominated anything. It was a deleted file. To call that a medical file defies logic.
It had a date on it, though, didn't it?
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
And that date
September 30th, 2009.
That date corresponded to the approximate time when one of the alleged victims was present?
That does not correspond to a date of an appointment for any of the victims.
I meant approximate time.
Well, it depends on how approximate we're talking about. It was within weeks of that time frame. So there's really no indication that of Dr. Bradley's patient, any particular patient's file was documented on that particular drive, which was not located inside the medical office. So I would say that it does not approximate that and really bore no resemblance to a medical file, no indication that it was a medical file. When the detective still...
Let's do an analogy that when we're dealing with electronic evidence compared to paper evidence, I find it helpful sometimes to do a paper world analogy. Imagine a filing cabinet, and if the warrant authorizes the search for medical files, you open a metal filing cabinet and you start looking for medical files. And you have to open the file, at least to look into it briefly, to determine what it is. Isn't that, in essence, what happened with the September 30 file, that it was opened to see what it is, and then once the officer saw what it was, stopped and proceeded to get another one?
That is an analysis that usually is used in terms of seeking contraband computer files. And that is would be if they were looking for child pornography. You would have to open a file on a child pornography, on a disk with child pornography to find out what it is, because the person who keeps child pornography hides it from you and might mislabel it. But a person who has a medical file, who is operating a medical office, a doctor, would label those documents in a manner which he or anyone else in his practice would be able to access it as needed. because it is used in the practice of medicine. There's when you do look inside a cabinet for paper files, you don't have to look through every single piece of paper to find out whether this file belongs to this patient. The file is labeled. It's labeled with the name, or it's organized in a fashion that the doctor can lay hands on it. So there is actually, I would submit to the court, no correlation.
Are you suggesting that a date absolutely demonstrates that it is not a medical file?
I wouldn't say that, but I would say that it doesn't demonstrate a reasonable probability that it is one of the patient medical files of one of the children alleged in the warrant here. So of the many different drives and disks that were seized, there's no indication on the face of that those disks, and there's no indication by the September 30th, 2009 notation on it, in a drive found in a building in a location which had nothing to do with the medical practice, that had anything to do with any of the victims mentioned in the affidavit.
You say the building had nothing to do with the medical practice. How was that knowable? I mean, if that is a fact, how was that knowable at the time that the warrant was executed? After all, there was a complaint from a parent of one of the victims that this child had been carried physically by Dr. Bradley to that building, which you argue has nothing to do with the medical practice. Why else would the child be carried there if it weren't because that building had something to do with the medical practice, at least ostensibly?
Well,
that is why couldn't a fair-minded, neutral person conclude that perhaps that building, like the main building, did have something to do with the medical practice?
Well, that's a Garrison, Maryland versus Garrison question, it seems to me, about what you would know at the time that you're executing a warrant.
I'm not sure how you characterize the question case name-wise, but why don't you answer it?
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. I would indicate that when a police officer is executing a warrant, and when they come upon a situation which is not reflected in the warrant to be true, then they have to stop at that point in time and seek some other authorization. When the police officer entered that building and saw that it was not a medical practice, that it did not contain anything that resembled medical files, that it did not contain digital media that looked like medical files, was organized in a way that was medical files, that they then had an obligation to stop and to reassess their situation and to determine whether there's probable cause to still conduct this search. And Maryland, Garrison versus Maryland, police officers came upon a scene of a narcotics search, and at that point in time, they went into the building, entered into an apartment, and saw drugs. At the point in time where they had seen the drugs, they had actually entered into the wrong apartment, but they had no way of knowing that at that point in time. And they seized that. But at the point in time where these officers had entered into the building B, the garage with the painted racing stripes on it, at that point in time, they had no reason to believe that that was in any way involved in the practice of medicine. It did not look like it. It did not contain any indications of it. And there were no files or other documents stored in a manner likely to contain medical
files.
There
were empty examination rooms?
There was no examination room in that building.
There was an empty space?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
An empty space?
There was full of toys and gewgaws, but nothing related to medical practice.
I thought Building B was where Dr. Bradley maintained his office.
Building B is a place that was full of robots and toys and cars.
I understand that, but was it also the place where he maintained his office?
It was a place that had a desk with a computer on it.
Well, who used it?
Right.
Well, I would think Dr. Bradley probably did, I guess. But it does. It's not an office per se. The medical office where the files were kept was in the two-story building, where also I'm at 4 seconds, so I'm out of time. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely, Paul Wallace on behalf of the State, the appellee in this matter. In 2009, a pediatrician was accused of sexually abusing his pediatric patients. The accusation was that he was doing so on his business premises, that he was doing so as part of their treatment visits, either actually in the examination room on certain circumstances or directly after medical procedures when they might be taken somewhere else. The police set forth their probable cause to believe that, in fact, his records of his medical practice related to those patients may assist in the investigation of that crime. And as the court has already noted, the reasonable inferences are clear. When it is during the course of his practice, those records may either confirm that, for instance, what this child is talking about is part of the regular medical treatment and we need not worry, thereby exonerating, or confirm, yes, that child is there, that child is a patient, that child was there at particular times. And so they set about doing that. In the course of the investigation, they also learned that children, at least one child, was seen taken to Building B. And as Justice Berger rightly pointed out, that, even from Mr. Bradley's own staff, the day that they went to look at the search warrant, they asked, where's his office? And they pointed back to Building D. That was his workspace. They can call it whatever they wish. There's a desk set up there, there's a computer, there's everything else. Now what they want to do is they want to try to paint this or have an analysis where you make some Marcus Welby imagery of what an office is and what a file is, and it's only the manila folder that has a few pieces of paper from which Dr. Welby could cure everything, as I recall the show, when in reality what they were faced with was a practice outside of the actual examination rooms that looked more like a scene from Hoarders. There were files everywhere, down in the basement, there were files in the patient area also, but also what they knew, both from common sense that they've set forth in the actual warrant, was that we don't do medicine like Marcus Welby did. That there are things like imagery of photographs even. I know when I go to my dentist, they actually hold up the thing and take a picture of me now, and it's there in my file. We know that because, and so do neutral detached magistrates and police officers who set forth.
Now, the
that
file that
like,
was labeled September 30th.
Yes, Your Honor.
As I understand the other side's argument, it should have been obvious that that was not a medical file. And but why is that correct or incorrect?
I'd suggest, first of all, it's incorrect because here is where that file is found. There was on Dr. Bradley's, actually at his desk, in the CPU, is a thumb drive. What Detective Spillin found when he first looked at that thumb drive, that was the very first thing to be looked at. So we're talking about a doctor's own notes, a doctor's own records, and whether or not he's keeping computerized notes or records as part of it, certainly a thumb drive is something that, obviously, in today's day and age, people use. They use it to transfer notes and files and things like that. So he looks it, he opens it up, and he sees only dates. Is it really unbelievable that a doctor may keep notes by date, and that's how he is transferring them? No. Just as the court said, what Mr. Goff would have us believe is that we have to pay attention to what the person who is, by the way, accused and is being investigated wrongdoing, puts on the outside of the folder, to use the paper analogy. And if it says, not medical file, we set aside that one, even though it may be. That's not how search warrants are conducted. They're conducted in a reasonable way to determine, what is this? Is it relevant? And then you move on. So he opens something that is attached to the doctor's own computer at his workspace, right there in the business. It was not, he's right. If you looked at this practice, Building A was basically where he saw patients that had the examination rooms, the waiting room, and things like that. But all of us have doctors. We all know that they have their own place, their desk, where they do their work. And from all indications, that's what Building B, this computer area, was. And so to look at the thumb drive on there, to determine whether or not that had bits or pieces of patient records, in whatever format, whether they be computerized, whether they be imaging, because we know that the modern medical record has imaging in it, either pictures or x-rays or sometimes video, depending on what it is. It was very reasonable for the police officer to look at that first, to determine whether or not, is this part of a medical record for one of these eight patients that we are going, that we are concerned about?
There appear to be several arguments relating to Building B that are getting conflated. I just want to make sure I have them straight. One of them is that that Building B was not the actual outbuilding that was described in the warrant, and the response to that was Building B corresponded to what was actually observed by the officer who executed the warrant.
Yes, Your Honor, and he testified, and that factual question was resolved by the Superior Court. Isn't clearly erroneous.
The second question is, once the executing officers got to Building B and opened the door and saw that it didn't have any medical files, they should have shut the door and not gone any further to execute the warrant. And your response to that is, number one, that the officer knew that the doctor had his private office there. Number two, there were toys there, which indicated that there had that the children might have been taken there for some treatment-related purpose. And three, even though there were no medical files, warrant was the search warrant was broad enough to encompass computer-generated files. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, Your Honor, and I would actually add a number four, and that was, from the warrant and from what they knew of the investigation, a child had actually been taken there as part of a treatment visit. And so there was reason to believe that records could be there. And the records may not, again, be the manila folder that, that he pulls out.
Well, that gets to the next argument, which is, all right, once the executing officer opened the drawer to the desk where the computer was located and found a thumb drive, there should have been no, that thumb drive should not have not have been opened, attached to a computer and opened. And I guess your response was, well, the officer was entitled at least to assume that thumb drive might have computer-generated records once the officer discovered that they had other types of images that were not strictly medical. The officers stopped and then got an additional broader warrant. Is that?
Your Honor, I do need to correct the factual recitation that the court gave, and that is this thumb drive was actually attached to the CPU. It was plugged into the computer.
Taken out of the drawer.
Yes. Okay. Basically, it's as many of us might have it set up now, monitor up on top of the workstation, CPU down here with the thumb drive actually plugged in. So there was every reason for the officer to believe this is part and parcel of his work. If he goes there to do his private work and do his notes or whatever related to his patient's records, why wouldn't we find patient records on there? And so that's why it would be even more reasonable for him to pull it out and take a look. And I suggest that clearly, once Detective Spillin realized what he saw, this isn't quote patient record, something that's within the scope of our warrant right now, he did exactly the right thing. Shut it down, got another warrant. And so the state respectfully suggests that, first of all, Building B was clearly within the warrant here. The judge who heard this, heard the testimony, understood and saw the layout and understood exactly what the detective was saying. Was there a clerical error in where it was put in the warrant? Yes. Clearly there was, but that was really of no moment because the judge found that that was a clerical error. It should have been put up in property instead of person. But that was the building, and it made sense. It made sense because of what had been put into that warrant and what the investigators knew, that a patient, at very least once, had been seen taken there. When they got there, it clearly appeared to be the workstation, the private, the more personal workstation of the doctor. And therefore, to take the thumb drive out of the very computer that he appears to use for his medical practice to search to determine, are these records related to our search, was appropriate. And then once there was a determination as to what it was, the appropriate action was taken by Detective Spillin. He closed it back up, and he got a separate warrant.
Now, the separate warrant, I take it that's not challenged if this one, this search was
There is nothing in the papers challenging that separate warrant or the probable cause for it or anything else. That obviously, that relies upon this saying, well, it would be the fruit of a poisonous tree because whatever was found by Detective Spillin shouldn't have been part of that to then allow the further search. So if this warrant were to fall, I believe then there would be some other challenges to those warrants.
Now, the case gets complicated by the fact that the executing officer and his colleagues also searched two other buildings, C and D.
Yes.
Before they, instead of relying upon whatever legal advice was available to them, and the argument is that because it's unknowable which material was collected from which building, all of the searched and seized and searched material has to be suppressed. I understand that one of the state's responses is no, it is, we do know that no material was actually introduced into evidence and used to convict Dr. Bradley from building C or D. And therefore, even if there was an illegal search and seizure, there was nothing illegal to suppress. Is that your statement or not?
Your Honor, I believe that that's conceded. I believe that defense concedes that, in fact, no evidence from C&D was used against Dr. Bradley or introduced into evidence. We very clearly identified each and every piece of evidence and where it came from. It was all from B. And I don't know that there's any factual question about that. I think the arguments about C and D are more to try to have the court understand that they believe that there was an over-execution, if that's the proper terminology of this.
You're saying that it was that they were executing it in bad faith as opposed to making specific search and seizure arguments relating to items taken from those two buildings?
Yes, Your Honor. If there are no other questions from the court, I have no further argument, and the state would rely upon its brief.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You actually used up all your time, but if you would like 1 minute, I can give you 1 minute to argue. It's not necessary.
Your Honor, thank you so much for the court's indulgence. I do appreciate that.
The only comments I would make in rebuttal were that the comment I made and the argument I made in the reply brief that was filed with the court, and that is that if Detective Spillin, as he reviewed that first thumb drive that was found attached to the CPU, was really attempting to look for only patient files, he was in no position to do so, as he had none of the names and knew none of the names of the patients that were listed. He stated so on the record in examination. He was not in any position to be able to segregate one way or another what evidence was obtainable under the warrant and what evidence was not. And based upon that and that alone, this particular piece of evidence and everything that derived of it should be suppressed.
Why is his state of mind relevant? Isn't the test an objective one?
The test for whether something is knowable or unknowable is objective. In the execution of a search warrant, when you have objects that are seizable, you can do that based upon information you know or should know. He should have known the names of those children. The files were in the hand of the police. He did not know it and made no attempt to tailor his search to the objects that were authorized to be seized by the warrant. That alone makes the warrant and the execution of that warrant unconstitutional.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take this matter under advisement and stand in recess.